one of the things I realized by listening to a bunch of other people talk about how they are creative was the fact that they start every morning creating something for themselves. So instead of waking up and getting ready to go to work to do the things that other people are asking you to do, you get up and you work on the stuff that you want to do.
This is the Cracking Creativity Podcast, episode number 50 with Kevin Chung. Welcome to the Cracking Creativity Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Chung, and I'm here to show you how creatives turn their ideas into action, create interesting projects, and build an engaged audience through shared passions. Now let's get creative. In this episode of the Cracking Creativity Podcast, I turn the tables and have my friend Jaco interview me for the 50th episode. I wanted to give all of you a better insight into my journey and everything that I've been up to with this podcast and my site. In it, I discuss the beginnings of my creative journey, why I started the blog Marketing Your Art the Right Way, my quote art collection and upcoming book, influences for my work, my podcast, and much more. Hope you guys enjoy this one. Now on to the episode.
Welcome to another episode of Cracking Creativity. I'm your guest host, Jacques Ho, and today we're talking with Kevin Chung. Kevin's the usual host of this podcast, but today, in celebration of 50 creative episodes, we're turning the tables on Kevin to talk to him about his journey so that we may get to know the man behind the curtain. On top of the podcast, Kevin's also the author of a blog called Marketing the Right Way, which helps people sell art without selling out, and also offers a free ebook called How to Be a Successful Artist, which is beautifully done, if I may say so. As Kevin looks towards the future, he has a few additional projects coming down the pipeline, including a book project involving quote art, as well as a budding mastermind group, which is cooking up some interesting stuff behind closed doors. Hey, what's up, Kevin? Thanks for being here today. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jacques. I'm glad you could come in here and be the host for today's episode so I can talk to the people myself.
Yeah, I'm excited to flip the script on you today, man. Thanks for doing so much heavy lifting when it comes to creativity. I'm excited to see what's going on the inside for you.
Great.
All right. So art and creativity are central themes to all of your projects, past and present. What sort of experience has guided you towards the realization of creativity as being such a strong focal point in your life?
Well, I started off being a creative person at a very young age. I used to draw and doodle a lot. One of the first things I can remember doing was drawing cartoons to mimic Disney movies I've seen. Mm-hmm. I wasn't very good at it, but it was really fun to explore those creative avenues. One thing that really sticks out in my mind is drawing on my bedroom door as a kid. I drew the Tasmanian Devil. I don't know why I chose the Tasmanian Devil, but I got in a lot of trouble for that one, which didn't really stop me from drawing, but that was really interesting.
But did you, like, have a piece of paper on your door, or did you physically draw on the door itself?
I drew on the door.
Oh, that's a little bit different. I can see why your mom might be a little unhappy about that.
Yeah, it was. Well, when you're a little kid, you're like, eh, I guess I'll see what happens when I do this.
Uh-huh.
And another thing that happened was drawing underneath the kitchen table with crayons. That didn't go over so well either.
So you're physically drawing on the table now?
Correct. Just drawing on different things, I guess, was a theme. And yeah, it was just something that I did as a little kid that my brother had sports and stuff, and I had drawing on stuff.
Well, we start off early by venturing off the beaten path to express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So let's fast forward to a couple years back, starting with Marketing the Right Way. Can you tell me about your mission with the blog and how you got started with it?
Well, I was exploring a lot of different ideas at the time because I was doing a blog where I posted different creative things like fashion and drawings and illustrations and just all different sorts of creative projects. It was a site called Who Designed It, and it actually started off as a project where people could figure out where to get different things that they see on the internet. So when you're browsing the internet, you see all these different pictures and you're wondering, where can I get that thing? It didn't actually end up going that direction because I didn't know how to take it that way. So I turned it into a blog just to explore the creative avenues. But I figured out that that wasn't something that could, that was fueling my own creativity. So I decided to start this blog to help show other people how to inspire themselves and show people that marketing and all these things aren't detrimental to your being an artist. They're actually helpful to being an artist because they allow you to spread the word about your art. And therefore, by doing that, you're able to make some money. And by doing that, you can create more art because you have the means to do that. So the blog was started to really teach people how to, A, market their art, and B, learn how to build a website or fix your website so that it reflects your art, and how most artists' websites are pretty terrible, in my opinion. So I'm trying to teach people, here's why your website is not working the way it should, and here's how you can fix it to become the thing that you want it to be.
For sure. So a couple of the buzzwords that you dropped were inspiration as well as marketing, which happens to be the name of your blog. And what experiences did you have that that spoke to you in terms of your expression being a valuable source for communicating with others? Or how did you come to discover that that inspiration is something that's worthwhile, or let alone a driving force that you should follow?
I think it started as wanting to help the people in the avenues that I knew how to, because I am, by day, a web designer and marketing person for a website that sells things. So through that experience, I think I'm able to show people how to do the things I already know how to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like using that information to try to teach people how to do it. And through that, I randomly started to figure out what I'm supposed to write, because in order to keep people coming back, you have to consistently create things. So one of the first things I did was I pulled out a quote by Marcus Aurelius, and that was inspired by a Ryan Holiday's book, The Obstacle is the Way. And with that quote, he talks about how obstacles aren't something that should prevent you from accomplishing your goals, or something that can become the way that empowers you to overcome things. Because by seeing that obstacle, you can find out different ways around it, and therefore figure out the path that can lead you to success, as opposed to just turning around and giving up at that point.
Yeah, it's definitely easy for us to want to be suffering or pain or obstacle averse, but yeah, I think life has also taught me that the only way, you know, to it is to go through it, because that's how we grow and we learn. So I think that Ryan Holiday was definitely onto something. So I was telling you just before the call started that one of my early goals from a couple years back was to read both of your blog posts, which speaks to the state of infancy that your blog was in at the time. And it's been really interesting to see how it's grown over the past couple of years, because you're upwards towards 70 posts in that neighborhood. But speaking of previous conversations on goals and habits, I know that your writing exercises have grown over time. You started out with write one sentence each morning, write 50 words, write 10 ideas, etc. Can you talk me through what your current writing practice looks like and how it helps you with your projects?
Yeah, I started off writing, having the goal of writing every day, because one of the things I realized by listening to a bunch of other people talk about how they are creative was the fact that they start every morning creating something for themselves. So instead of waking up and getting ready to go to work to do the things that other people are asking you to do, you get up and you work on the stuff that you want to do. So when you're in that mindset, it's easier to work on yourself first than it is to work for other people. Because by the end of the day, you come back from work, you've been working for 8 hours or so, and you're tired, and you don't feel like doing anything at that point. So the idea was to start small, so with maybe a couple of sentences a day, to see where that went. And then over time, it grew to 100. Make sure you do 100, and then by now, it fluctuates. I have no idea how many words, but it's definitely more than 100.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, with the practice of writing 10 ideas each morning, then you certainly have to turn into a bit of an idea think tank. Have you had any gems come out or any ideas that have really stuck with you that have actually turned into something new?
With the 10 ideas a day, that's actually a thing from James Altucher, who's one of the people that I look up to as far as examples of people to follow or people who have gone through different things, because he lost all his money multiple times and he built himself back up. And one of the things that he realized was by creating 10 ideas a day, you're exercising your idea muscle.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't just be creative on command. It's not easy to do if you don't use it.
Right.
So the idea is to consistently create those 10 ideas a day so that you can come up with a solution to a problem that you might have at any given point. So if somebody asks you, do you have an idea for this? You can say, oh, yeah, I can give you 10 ideas right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been really the fuel for many of my big blog posts. So ideas of what to do and what not to do with your website, why you shouldn't go after huge audiences when you're trying to market your work, because the narrower you can get with your audience, the easier it is to connect with those people. 10 ideas you can steal from me right now, and that involve different things like Reddit AMAs, podcasting interviews, just a bunch of different ideas you normally wouldn't think of in order to get your work out there.
Wow. Yeah, exercising that idea muscle sounds like something that's critical. I mean, nobody can be expected to lift 100 pounds of something without going to the gym or at least having a bodyweight workout at home. And just to give the listeners an idea of how frequently you exercise the muscle and how frequently it turns into something viable, you know, 10 ideas a day can seem a little bit overwhelming, and it's easy to see success on the outside when it's finally shared with everybody else. But how often, or what would you say the ratio might be of the ideas that you produce versus the ideas you can actually use?
That's interesting, because the thing when you do it is the first maybe 4 or 5 come really easily, and then at the back end you're like, oh, I can't think of anything. That's the point of it. So you're struggling to figure out how to think of a new idea to fit the topic of the day. And when you're doing that, you come up with your most interesting ideas at the end, because those are the things that don't come so easily, the things that people aren't doing, the things that you can use possibly in combination with other things.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's another thing in there. It's called idea sex. And the thing is you combine one idea from one day with an idea from another day and see how those two things can work together to come up with something that is completely original, because without those separation of days, you wouldn't have thought of those things, two things coming together.
Wow.
Which makes for some really interesting things.
How interesting. So when it comes to exercising this idea muscle, do you ever find that you have idea muscle memory? And the reason I ask is because if you're practicing producing ideas every morning, then do you notice that maybe at other times throughout the day, then it's easier for ideas to generate, yeah, as you're working on other things?
Huh. I never actually thought of it like that.
New idea. Dun, dun, dun.
I don't quite use it in that way. I normally use it just to create new ideas, but when you are trying to think of ideas during the day, it does help that you have the ability to do that 10 ideas, or you have that ability to string yourself, not to think of the first thing that comes to mind. So I haven't really used it in that way, but I can see how it could be very helpful in those situations when you're trying to come up with something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it appears you've been coming up with quite a few new somethings, so it sounds like something's working out for you. One of your current projects that continues to evolve is your collection of quote art. Speaking of ideas that I really enjoy, and going back to your first blog post that you mentioned, it has your first quote art that showcases Marcus Aurelius, and likewise with your second blog post, it has another quote from Maya Angelou. Can you walk me through how this particular part of your project has evolved over time, and in particular, how much was planned versus organic, or how did the idea generate for you?
Let's see. The idea was, like going back to it, just something I can write about. Because I had that goal of writing 50 words a day as it started, and then 100 words a day.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it started off as that. I didn't intend for it to become a thing. But what it allowed me to do was, one, find quotes that are really meaningful to me or for creative people. And with that, I have an Evernote notebook that currently has 585 quotes that I haven't written anything for.
Wow.
So by thinking about all these ideas that people who are normally pretty famous, these people have quotes because they are famous that other people have copied down. What I'm trying to do is figure out why that person said that thing, why it has meaning to me, and why it might have meaning to you. It also allows me to play around with art. So it acts as a dual purpose. Here's this idea that I want to explore. And also allows me to make a piece of art that would never have existed if I didn't start the project. So it's a really interesting way to combine art making and idea generation into this singular thing. And the idea that I want that you mentioned was an ebook to start that compiles all of the quotes and the art into a book, and then a person that embodies that particular quote, and then some action steps that you can take in order to live that quote that week. So it would be 52 weeks of creative inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like a great project from front to back, because the original quote was obviously said for a reason, but to demonstrate or illustrate the value of the quote with a live case study is something that would really drive it home.
That's the idea.
Can you give us an example of a recent selection that you've made as far as how somebody has embodied a quote that you've chosen?
Let me dig around here. Okay, here we go. This quote is by Aristotle, and it's, "We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit." And the idea there is really people who you consider to be very successful or have great projects, you consider them to be excellent. They didn't get there by accomplishing that thing. They got there because they created the habits that allowed them to create things to get there. And the example for this one is the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
So before the Beatles actually became famous, Malcolm Gladwell did some research. I don't know if he was the first one to do it, but in his book Outliers, he found that the Beatles played thousands of hours, and the idea is 10,000 hour rule that allows you to reach expertise. Mm-hmm. And they played thousands of hours in Hamburg, Germany before they made it big with their albums. So through the habit of practicing and playing every day, every night for hours on end in Hamburg, they were able to create the habit that allowed them to be excellent. It wasn't because they had these great albums. It's because they were able to practice enough that habit to create those albums.
Hmm. Gotcha. Yeah, having a live case study you can actually cite. Like I mentioned earlier, it really drives the point home, or it brings life to that quote or that practice that you mentioned. And I know that through a lot of our conversations, you've dropped a lot of names regarding ideas, daily practices, and lessons learned that have made a difference in your life. Who would you say has been the most influential here in your life?
There are a couple of people that come to mind right away. One, like I mentioned earlier, was James Altucher. And his thing is not just those 10 ideas a day. He calls this thing daily practice.
Mm-hmm.
And that is spiritual, mental, physical, and emotional health. So if you can improve yourself in each of those avenues every single day, that will make you a better person, and that will lead to better things. So it's not just about this one thing, oh, I want to look healthier, or I want to improve my ability to create or think better. It's the combination of every single thing that allows you to become who you want to be. And that was really powerful. And I think if anyone wants to check out his ideas more, he has a book called Choose Yourself that talks about each one of those different things and why you should rely on yourself and not other people to get to where you want to be. And another person who has definitely had a huge impact on my life is Ramit Sethi. And mm-hmm. Jock, you should know that because we are both in his group. He has a group called Ramit's Brain Trust, and that's just a group of people who want to be high achievers in life and how you can use ideas from different people in different ways to make yourself better. And the biggest thing that he teaches is not, his site is actually called I Will Teach You to Be Rich, but it's not the idea of, oh, I want to be like a millionaire. It's, I want to have richness in my life, whether that's through health, money, business, or whatever. It's just, I want to live a rich life for myself. So his biggest thing is having the right mindsets and taking action and thinking in ways that will be beneficial to yourself as well as those mindset things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. For me, it's really easy to appreciate the concept that the definition of a rich life is going to vary from person to person because it's not just about money. It's more about what allows you to discover happiness, freedom, joy, and what are the means that will get you there. So I completely agree on the content that he has. And you mentioned James Altucher a little bit in the beginning, excuse me, regarding your writing practices as well as the holistic approach towards wellness so that you can be at your best. And if I remember correctly, you had written a book review on Choose Yourself that Altucher ended up retweeting. Is that correct?
That is right. I'm not sure that it means really much, but it was really cool to see that he's out there looking at stuff that people are doing and appreciating the work that others may have done. And of course he's promoting himself because the book was written by him, but it shows that he has the appreciation for people who recognize that thing. And that's one thing that a lot of experts, if you want to say that, advocate is to do the things that they are telling you to do. And when you have the evidence of that thing making you a better person, you show that to them. And they're going to appreciate that for one. And two, they might have something like that retweet or like interaction with them that makes you stand out in their mind. So if you ever want to talk to them or if you want to have interaction or if you want to interview them or anything, you have that avenue already that you've shown evidence of their work working.
Yeah. And you know, even from a third party perspective, I thought that was a pretty great moment for a couple of reasons, because first, you're certainly not the first person to read the book. And second, you're certainly not the first person to write a review about that book. And so amidst all the reviews that he had to have read, there must have been something that spoke to him about your experience that caused him to retweet it and share it with others.
That might be true. Or it might be that he retweets things that have been mentioned. It doesn't really matter in that aspect. It's just cool to see that he recognizes and appreciates it.
Mm-hmm, for sure. All right, so I want to change directions a little bit because you have a couple of projects in the works that may not necessarily have seen the light of day yet. You and I have talked about an upcoming project, which is a mastermind group of sorts. Can you give us a few hints as to what we might be able to expect from this?
Yeah. For those who don't know this already, Jacques and I are accountability partners, and what that means is he mentioned the first two posts that I ever did, and every week we meet and talk about different things that are happening within our lives and what we want to do to accomplish our goals. So this project, I think it started a long time ago. I had this idea a while ago, but it's now coming into fruition. I'm working with two other very cool creative people, and Mike Roy and Kent Sanders. And we are trying to create a group for creative people and artists that allow them to see what we've already seen through our creating and exploration. So we want to empower other creative people to work on their first project or learn how to write or learn how to build their website or learn how to start their own podcast or any of these things that we're trying to do to help them and feel a community of creative people to, you know, get out of the wrong mindsets and get into the right mindsets to sell their work or create a novel or write the music that they want to write. And the name of the group that we came up with was Journey to Creative Freedom. So the idea there is to take the idea of freedom and creativity and a journey to get there. So everyone is going through a journey in life, whether you think you are or you aren't. And we want to empower those creative people to go on the journey to leave their possible day job or leave the project that they don't like working on or to work on themselves so that they can continue to create and make a living for themselves doing what they love.
That's great. Yeah, the aspect of creative freedom, I think, is something that we tend to dislearn over time.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels to me that your creativity will max out when you have the capacity or the freedom to do it how you want, when you want, et cetera. It reminds me of one of the TED Talks that I saw early on. In fact, I think this might be the most popular TED Talk. It's with Sir Ken Robinson, and he talks about mm-hmm. how the education system is currently destroying creativity. And the example that he gave early on was about a six-year-old girl who's drawing a picture, and her teacher comes over and asks, "What is it you're drawing there?" And she goes, "I'm drawing a picture of God." And the teacher comes back and she goes, "Well, dear, nobody really knows what God looks like." And the little girl says, "They will in a minute."
That's awesome.
Yeah, and the thing that spoke to me about that moment was that that girl had no restrictions or constraints or boundaries or any version of can't with what she was doing. And she wasn't even letting that teacher get in her way, despite the fact the teacher had at least a few decades of life experience on her. But yeah, it sounds like the capacity for creative freedom is going to be a winning selling point for that one. So for the listeners, can you, in order to put some context around the mastermind group, can you tell us a little bit of background with the other two contacts that you have?
The first, Mike Roy, I think he sent me an email. He signed up for my email newsletter, and he contacted me and said he really liked what I was up to. So I'm like, okay, that's cool. And then I saw that he was doing something with artists himself. So he was doing a thing where he is trying to crack different myths of the creative life. So one of them is the Cinderella myth, which is you're going to find that glass slipper that brings you exposure and popularity and all that stuff. Hmm. And that doesn't really exist because you have, in order for somebody to find you there, you have to consistently create to do that. And that's not like a one-time thing. That is very rare that you can create something that will catch fire immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is to crack these different creative myths and show people that these things aren't true and here's how you can deal with them. So we started talking for quite a while, at least a year. And we met monthly to talk about our different projects and how we can help each other with them. And then in one of those conversations, Mike mentioned Kent, who I hadn't heard of before. And Kent is also a creative. He is an author, and he also works in like a religious school in the ministry. So he has different ideas on how creatives in that aspect are having trouble. And one of the big ones there is money. So when you have certain ideals, the idea of making money to make money is frowned upon, I guess. So what he's trying to show is that making money doesn't mean that you're doing it for greedy or personal aspiration goals. It's you're making money so that you can continue to create, which is a common theme that I found. So I talked to him, and he had already been talking to Mike. So I'm like, why don't we just jump on a call together and see what we can come up with? Mm-hmm. And so the idea of this creative mastermind was one of the first ideas that actually stuck. And we talked about doing a webinar. So we're just trying to come up with different ideas on how we can help other creative people on their journeys instead of having three of us work separately, which we will continue to do. We are also having this combined thing that tries to get more people together.
Yeah. I really like your approach you're taking with the mindset change, especially when it comes to making money or pursuing what your goals are, because in this society we have today, it's easy to feel like the word selfish has a negative connotation, but when you're looking for something for yourself, it's because we all want to be happy. We all want to discover what speaks to our heart and our soul. But for me, I think we're only selfish in a negative way when we stop considering others in the process. But to speak to the point that you made about making money in pursuit of your art or your creativity, it reminded me of this past Friday night. Turns out that Chris Gilbo was here in town, and both you and I know that he's known for traveling to every single country in the world. I think it was a span of 11 years or something like that, and he actually just released a new book called Born for This, and the subject or the topic for this book is that you have to take the steps necessary to discover what you were born to do. And one of the slides that he had in his presentation was that the common perception is my money or my joy. It could have been my life or my art or, you know, fill in your other passion term of choice. But the one following right after that should be my money and my joy. So you can make it something sustainable out of what you enjoy doing. And it's something that far fewer of us are doing than possible. I'm not sure if that's the best way of expressing that, but I feel that we all have the capacity of doing that. And it's going to be exciting to see what you guys come up with.
Yeah, one of the great things that Chris Gilbo does is a thing called World Domination Summit. Mm-hmm. And that brings together people of all walks of life that are trying to make a difference in the world. And when you bring all those people together, you see a lot of interesting things come out of it. I've actually interviewed a bunch of different people that I met at the World Domination Summit last year, 2015. Mm-hmm. And everyone there seems to have this great thing that they are working on. And by fostering that community, he is able to not only build that up, but he's also able to take himself in this way that allows him to be the connector of people, which is really cool.
Yeah. I've heard so many great things about World Domination Summit. And I know that you went last year. If you could give one selling point for somebody who's never been, just out of sheer curiosity, what would you say?
Huh. One selling point?
Or you can go top three if you're flooded with ideas.
I actually wrote an article on it. I don't remember exactly what the points I made were, but one of the best things about it, like I mentioned earlier, was the idea of community. Uh-huh. And one of the really cool things that he did for this past one, I think he's been doing for a while, is trying to break a bunch of world records. Mm-hmm. So the ones that we attempted last year, which I don't know if we got or not, were the largest breakfast in bed, or something like that. So all these, they brought hundreds of beds into one of the squares in Portland, which is where it's based. And a bunch of people just ate breakfast. Uh-huh. So the largest grouping of people eating breakfast in bed was one. The second one, which is how they kicked off their actual talks, and in World Domination Summit, they have a bunch of keynote speakers. And before they started the first talk, they had a high-five line. So there were thousands of participants in World Domination Summit last year, so they had a line of high-fives, and it started at the first person to walk in. And then you would turn around and high-five the next person, mm-hmm. and it would go all the way down the line until it hit everybody that was in that line. I don't know if we broke that one either.
Mm-hmm. You know, you can't win if you don't play, right?
And then there was another one where it was like the most people putting lipstick on at the same time or something. So in one of the keynote addresses, they handed out these small lipstick things, and they had everyone put it on at the same time.
So what do you think the purpose is behind trying to defeat all of these existing records? And did they have somebody, did they have an official representative from Guinness, or who was validating that a record had been broken?
That much, I don't know. I think they just had the idea of the number that they had before, and they knew how many people were participating.
Mm-hmm.
So they had an idea of whether or not they could, and they were just attempting to. I don't know if that's true or not. I haven't really done any research into it. I just thought it was really cool.
Any idea on the mindset behind the desire to break these records?
I think it's just the idea of coming together. So you have all these people who are there, and you're there for a common goal at that point, because you're trying to break a record. And it's just really cool to have the idea of having being part of breaking that record.
Hmm. Interesting. All right, so kind of backing down that enjoyable tangent that we just went on, how can people find out more about this mastermind group as it matures and develops?
Well, we are currently working on it, so it's not quite ready to go. But I believe we did buy the domain journeytocreativefreedom.com. And our first project was a webinar for people to work on their first creative project, launch their first creative project. And so all three of us would come together and talk about different things like mindset, how to choose your idea, focusing on the audience of who you want to reach with your idea.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all very beginning stages of the creative journey. So the first step before you can start selling your work is to figure out how to set yourself up to do it.
All right, so let's talk about this podcast. You've been doing the Cracking Creativity podcast for a while now. You started roughly a little over a year ago. Can you talk to me about what got you started on this path with podcasts?
Podcasting, that's a really interesting thing. I've been listening to podcasts for a very, very long time. And I thought it was just a really cool way to talk about different ideas or talk to different creative people about things that they've done that are really interesting and that I think I can learn from. I think other creative people can learn from. So I started going to a meetup group where I lived in Orlando, Florida. And that was just a group of people who are really interested in podcasting and how they can, or how they are using it with their own businesses or their own passions and projects. And I wasn't actually doing a podcast at that moment, but being in that group really inspired me to want to do it because all these other people were doing it. And I actually met one of the founders of Podcast Movement, which is one of the largest podcast groups or conferences in the world, which I'm going to this year. And
all right.
Meeting that person is like, oh, if he can do it and he has all these other people that are also doing it, why can't I do it too? So that was one of the things that got me into wanting to do it. And another is listening to such great podcasts. One of my favorites is The Unmistakable Creative with Sarini Rao. And he just talks to probably the most interesting people that you will ever hear of.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that he is able to bring out all these different ideas that these people have is really cool, and how he doesn't just talk about here's how to create a webinar. Here's how to, you know, make money off of this thing. Here's how to do whatever business side. He likes to talk about people's journeys, and I think that's something that I would like to do too, so that's what I started to do.
Yeah. You know, if I can share a little bit of feedback regarding my experience with podcasts and specifically in relation to you. First of all, if I haven't already said it, I have to say thank you for introducing me to podcasts, because before we started meeting on a weekly basis, I didn't even know what a podcast was. And now I can't stop. I listen to School of Greatness during my commute, The Art of Charm, and many others that you've recommended. And one thing that has really opened my eyes as a result of listening to Cracking Creativity, the experience was a little different from listening to the bigger, more established podcasts like School of Greatness or Ask Altucher, because it's really easy to dive in and listen to somebody interview somebody else who's famous. One example is Tim Ferriss. He interviews Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jamie Foxx, Tony Robbins. These guys are huge, and they have amazing stories. But listening to the interviews that you've done, I really like the idea that even though many of these people aren't known as public figures, they still have amazing stories to tell. And it made me realize that we all have amazing stories to tell, and we should pursue them so that maybe one day we can share the experience with somebody else and bring some more benefit in addition to the lives that we've had. So thanks for doing all of your interviews so far. It's been a wild ride.
Yeah, I think one of the really cool things is when I started, I didn't have any idea of who I would interview at first. So I started with the first person I knew that was really creative. Mm-hmm. And then I branched out a little bit from there, talking to people at the podcast group and seeing who they knew. And then World Domination Summit was definitely one of the big things that allowed me to find people who would be really cool guests on the show, because that's just a conference with so many great people in it. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I love to do is just ask the people who I've already talked to who they think might be good, because since they are doing these great things themselves, I'm sure they know other people who are also doing really cool things themselves. So by doing that, I'm able to make connections with not only that original person, but that person's friend, and strengthening their relationship to each other and with myself, and then anybody else who is attached to that person. So it's just trying to create this web of people that I know that are kind of related to each other, maybe not. And then another cool thing I try to do is introduce people to each other who might have some beneficial relationship, whether that's with a project they can work on or just spreading different ideas. And by doing the podcast, I've been able to talk to so many great people and so many great people that other people know. So.
What would you say is the most incredible moment that you've had from all of the interviews that you've done thus far?
Most incredible moment. I'm not sure that I can think of a single moment, but my favorite moments are the ones where people are telling a story of something that happened to them that you can relate to yourself. So this person went through this, and I can relate to that so much because of whatever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for me, that's easily the single clearest moment of learning for me is when I can connect with somebody else. And in fact, you know, you're also into improv, and I feel like between improv and stand-up comedy, I laugh the hardest when somebody talks or acts out something that I can connect with. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that resonance is definitely a key element. So how about this? What has surprised you the most from your podcast? What's happened that you didn't see coming or you didn't expect?
I didn't expect to have so many people to agree to coming onto the podcast. I know it's a good way to promote. It's a good way for people to promote themselves, but it's really cool to see that people want to talk to you about something, you know? It's surprising, even though you may or may not have a huge audience, like the people you mentioned, Lewis Howes and James Altucher and Tim Ferriss, people are still willing to share that story with you. And it doesn't matter how famous that person is, you can learn something from everybody you meet.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was another mindset shift that I had as well.
because it's, on one hand, it can be nice to have a large audience and it can be nice to talk to people who are very well known. But listening to your interviews has also made me think about the value that's delivered to that one person or to their community or to their network on top of the value that their stories bring to your listeners. Because one example that comes to mind for me is you recently spoke with Sarah Jackson, who happens to be a friend of mine out here in Colorado, and she runs a nonprofit called Casa de Paz. She's not famous by any means. She's not celebrity status. She doesn't have a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. But the service that she offers for families of detainees out here in Denver, there are many, many stories that she can tell and many valuable services that she offers, many lives that she has changed as a result. And her business or her operation is sustained on donations and the Volleyball Latino organization that she runs. And so for her to have a platform where she can tell her story and then broadcast it out, allow people to listen to it over and over again without her having to retell it every single time, has to be invaluable for her. It saves her incredible amount of time, and she can reach an unprecedented number of people prior to talking.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a great thing that's working for both ways.
I know you are also working, it's not a podcast, but it's you're interviewing a bunch of people. What has been your experience doing that?
With the interview process itself?
Yeah. So what kind of lessons do you learn, or what is your favorite part?
The most interesting part, so perhaps I'll take a step back just to put some context around it for the listeners. I'm working on a salsa research / gratitude project, and I'm talking about dancing, not the stuff that goes with chips. And the original aim was that first I wanted to discover what more of the unwritten rules or perspectives were that were embodied on the social dance floor that aren't necessarily talked about outside of a classroom environment. And then on top of that, about a year and a half ago, we lost our favorite dance venue here in Denver, where many of us have dance roots. We've built community. We have the fondest of memories. And the objective here is that I actually want to compile this into a memoir so that we can all remember the best times that we had out there. And in the interview process, the most fascinating part for me was to experience other people's stories, like you mentioned. I have my own stories in terms of personal growth. Like, I have no idea who I'd be or where I'd be had I not gotten into this crazy dance and danced at this amazing restaurant that we had. But as I started to casually talk to people on the side, it turns out that everybody had a unique story to tell that were equally amazing but completely different from my own experience. Mm. And to weave them together and add them into more of a puzzle that builds the community gives us a brand new macro perspective on as far as what's going on in our community, in our dance scene, how they tie together, what they mean for each of us, and lessons that we're able to take with us that may not be apparent right off the bat. So if we can bring that into the light and raise awareness and grow as a result, then it's an incredible win. I mean, even if only one person listens to what I've got by the time I'm done, and it makes a difference for that one person, then it's all worth it, because that's one life that could potentially be changed. Would you think you have a similar experience?
Yeah, I think it's, no matter how many people are listening, if you have that impact on one person, then I think it's just really cool that you have that impact. It's just, if you can make the world a better place by changing one person, I think you should go ahead and do that if you enjoy doing it yourself, you know.
Yeah.
If you don't like doing the thing that you're trying to do, then there's no reason to do it.
Definitely.
I just want to mention that you talked about a lot of this in more detail in the episode that we did together. So if you want to check that out, go ahead and see what Jacques' story is all about, because it was really interesting to see how he went from Dance Dance Revolution to the salsa festival.
Gosh, it's kind of crazy to notice how it's been a year since we've done that episode, and my project has developed so much since then. So perhaps in the show notes, or maybe in a future episode when everything is said and done, we can include a link so that anybody who's listening can check it out and see what it's all about. But you know what? I think another thing that's really interesting about this experience, where with you having this podcast – and myself being sort of the hub for the project that I'm working on. The way I look at it is that for me, it's not necessarily about me. I just happen to be the connector, you know, between the different people who are involved as far as my interviewees and perhaps the focal points of the, you know, the project that I can't give too many details away because there's a little bit of element of surprise that's coming up in this. But when it comes to connecting everybody involved, I feel like I'm the lucky one because I get to learn about everybody's experience directly. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's not about me. It's about everybody else. But the side benefit or the perk is that I get to experience everything directly. And so I imagine it's not too far from your experience because you get a chance to talk to your interviewees and you may get feedback from your listeners as far as how somebody's story has helped them or changed their life or made an impact. Have you ever gotten any feedback from your listeners?
I have. There aren't any that stick out very specifically, but I think a lot of the times the feedback comes from the people who I interviewed. So they hear a lot of the feedback.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not hearing that directly most of the time. But they tell me about how all these people have enjoyed their story. And it's just a really cool way to look inside what they are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it not only gets to the audience that I normally have, but it also gets to the audiences of the people who I'm interviewing. And they get to learn this cool thing about them that they may have never known.
Yeah. Yeah. That ripple effect certainly never hurts. And especially if you see it blow up on Facebook or something like that, maybe you can catch wind of some of the comments that are coming through.
Yeah. I think, you mentioned the Sarah Jackson story. That story got, relative to everything else I've done, it's gotten so much great feedback, and a lot of different people were sharing that story because it was such an interesting and great story that she was sharing and all the stuff that she was doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. I think I saw people share. It was like a share of a share of a share of a share. So maybe 6 or 7 degrees removed from your initial announcement that was on Facebook. It's pretty cool to see how it continues to travel and reaches further and further out.
Mm-hmm.
So considering all of that and considering all of the people you've spoken with and all of the feedback that you've received, what are 2 or 3 things that you personally learned from doing this podcast that you've been able to apply to your own life?
What have I learned? I've learned that creativity is something that is different within everybody's mind, which is really interesting because one of the questions that I ask is, what is your definition of creativity? And people have so many different ways of explaining it. It's really cool to hear those things. And not only that, but even though those answers are very different, there are some common elements within all of those things that tie it all together under that umbrella of creativity. So it just shows you that creative thinking isn't just one particular thing. It's many different things, and everyone views it a different way. Another thing is just hearing the way that people tell stories inspires you to figure out how to tell your own story in a better way, which I don't know if I am or am not doing a better job of, but I think telling a story is one of the ways that is the best ways to connect with other people.
How interesting. I like that you mentioned that because I noticed that with the process that I've had with my salsa project, as I interview more people and I experience their stories, I noticed that I have certain emotional and psychological reactions to their experiences. I end up learning more about myself as well. And these are things that I probably never would have picked up on had I not had the chance to experience somebody else in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah. If you could go back in time and talk to yourself when you first started Crafting Creativity, what advice would you give yourself?
What advice would I give myself? I don't know that I would change much, but I do think I would tell myself to reach out more to people, which I think I can probably do a better job of, just connecting with the people who are listening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that would probably be the biggest thing is to figure out what people like and don't like about it, what kinds of people had an impact on them, what types of people they want to hear more from. You know, just trying to figure out how to incorporate more people into the actual process.
Well, something tells me you certainly haven't run out of people to ask, because we have 2 or 3 bajillion people on the planet. So keep at it, man.
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty cool to hit this 50th episode in the series so far. What do you envision for the next 50?
Well, I have a lot in the backlog, which is why in some episodes you will hear references to earlier this year, but they really meant earlier last year, which is really funny because it's like, oh, in November I'm going to have, and it's not this coming November, it was last November. So there are some like inconsistencies on when things are happening and where they're happening or whether or not they're going to be relevant at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And some people's stories actually change after you've released it. So that's really interesting to see. But yeah, I just have a bunch in the backlog, and hopefully I can start to do some solo episodes, which I've been thinking about for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to get multiple ideas out about a particular subject or shorter, condensed best of snippets of a singular episode. So those are just two ideas I'm kind of thinking about and possibly will do at some point.
All right. Well, here's to another 50. It's going to be interesting to see how things are looking by the time you hit 100.
Hopefully.
So let's go ahead and crack open these creative juices that belong to Kevin Chung. Kevin, what is your favorite quote? And I'm actually going to put a qualifier on this. You can't choose anything that's in your quote collection, or at least none that you've published. You can have a famous figure, favorite superhero, your mom, maybe anybody.
One that I haven't published.
One that's not part of your current art collection.
Ooh. Let me think for a second. Okay, there are two that come to mind that I hope to do in the very near future.
Mm-hmm.
One is by Kanye West, and I don't know whether or not you like him or hate him. He is very creative, and I happen to like his music, even though he happens to be a polarizing and oftentimes terrible person. but anyways, he had a tweet that says, "No matter what level you're at in life, there is still a struggle." So all those people who you think have these perfect and wonderful lives, even somebody like Oprah or Kanye West or insert name here, those people have struggles as well. You might not think they do, but they do. They are just on a far grander scale than yours, but they are still the same types of struggles that you have. So that one is really cool. And the other one, which ties to the idea of making money and art, is from Walt Disney. And this quote actually I found through Austin Kleon's Show Your Work. And it is, "We don't make movies to make money. We make money to make more movies." So that goes back to the idea of you are creating art and selling it, not because you want to be this super rich or famous person. You're selling it so you can do more of what you love. And you can't do that without first putting a price tag on it and selling it so that you have the ability to continue to make it without worrying about how you will not starve or whatever that myth of starving artists is. You can sell your work without worrying about being that person who is greedy or selfish or whatever you think that person is.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Can you walk me through what your morning routine looks like?
I can. When I wake up, one of the first things I do is grab breakfast. Normally, it'll be in the form of some sort of fruit. And then I will go to my computer and open up my Kindle app. And I will read and highlight different passages while I eat my fruit. And after that, I brush my teeth, and I also highlight my Kindle book while brushing my teeth. And that serves as a dual purpose of doing these things that I need to do regardless and doing something that I want to do but don't need to necessarily make more time for because I can still do it within that time. So I can read and eat or read and brush my teeth at the same time, which just, you know, saves some time and effort.
For sure.
And right after that, I do the practice, which you mentioned earlier, of writing at least 100 words per day. I've missed a few days, but for the most part, I would think at least 95% of days I write 100 words. And a lot of times it has to do with the quote art I'm working on for that week, or it happens to be right now the creative people who embody the quotes that I've already done. So I'm trying to write different passages for people who represent those quotes. And I also have done it for the larger blog posts that I've done, like the book, How to Be a Successful Artist, and the Steal 10 Ideas from Me for different marketing purposes. And then after that, I spend a little bit of time each morning working on the quote art for that week. So, and then I drive to work, and while I'm driving to work, I listen to a podcast to see what kinds of things I can pull from that.
Just out of curiosity, everything that you mentioned that you do at home before you get into the car, how long does it take you to do all of this? Or how much time do you normally allot or spend for it?
So I usually wake up at 6 a.m. on weekdays, and weekends I don't. 6 a.m. to about 7:45, so like an hour and 45 minutes for all of that.
All right. What sort of recommendations do you have for books, podcasts, documentaries, or other resources that you'd like to share with your listeners?
I have so many.
I have no doubt you do. Top of the list. Give us the
list. I actually made a list of these for books. One that ties into the money making and the art aspect is a book by Elizabeth Hyde Stevens. And it's Make Art, Make Money, and it's Jim Henson's journey on creating everything from the Muppets to Labyrinth and how he did a bunch of stuff to make money first so that he can work on projects that he loves. Another one is The War of Art, and that is by Stephen Pressfield, and he just talks about resistance and the idea that creating your art is like going to a battlefield. Every day you have to battle the resistance and the idea that you're not good enough or the idea that your ideas aren't worthy. And it's just an inspiring look into how you can fight those things and try to become the type of artist that you want to become.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned Choose Yourself earlier by James Altucher, and that's just a great book on working on yourself and not having to rely on other people. Although having a group of people to support you is a great idea. The idea is not to let other people prevent you from doing things that you want to do. There are a bunch more. I've actually written a couple of reviews. Any book by Austin Kleon that I've read so far, Show Your Work and Steal Like an Artist, those are both fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And those are pretty short and cool. For podcasts, I already mentioned Unmistakable Creative. I'll mention again because those interviews are so good. If you're trying to build a business, there's a show called Fizzle. And those guys are hilarious, but they also provide a lot of great insights on building a business. And there's one more. I mean, there are a million more, but another one that people might not have heard of is Off Camera. And that is done by a photographer named Sam Jones. And he talks to a lot of famous creative people. And when you listen to those interviews with those people, you realize that they are people too. And it's we have this idea of celebrities as people who are other than, but they are just the same as all of us. And it's really cool to hear their struggles or how a lot of them still have the imposter syndrome like us,
mm-hmm.
even though they've made millions of dollars doing what they do.
Yeah.
Documentaries, Exit Through the Gift Shop, which is a movie about Banksy, which is really cool. Jiro Dreams of Sushi, which talks about a sushi chef in Japan, and he's been working at it for many, many years, and it's really cool seeing a master at work, essentially. And the Tim Ferriss Experiment, which is the group of shows that Tim Ferriss did where he took 2 days to learn a skill or teaching another person a skill and showing them that you can distill most of your learning into the 20% of the most important stuff related to your particular thing.
Hmm.
So one of them was he went and taught a woman to swim, and she was definitely afraid of it. And one thing that he did was learning to play the drums, which he had never done before. So he went to the masters of drumming, and he learned how to play the drums good enough so that he could play a song. I can't remember which band it was from. It's one of the big... It's a big band, though.
Okay.
But he played a song with them in one of their concerts.
Oh, no kidding.
He went from not knowing anything about how to play the drums to learning a song for the drums so that he could play with them in a concert.
Holy cow. You know, Derek Sievers has a page at Sievers.org, Sievers.org/now. And it's basically a page where if anybody's curious to know what he's currently working on, then he lists it there so people can just catch up.
Mm-hmm.
As much as you read, listen, create, etc., you ever think about having a page like this so that if anybody's curious about what you're currently working on, or if anybody wants recommendations on content that you found to be meaningful, I think this could be a cool project for you. You ever thought of that?
I have thought about it, but then I thought about having to upkeep it or remembering to change it when I'm done.
Uh-huh.
But if you want to know about the stuff that I'm working on or the content that I've listened to or any of that stuff, you can join my newsletter. And it's marketingtrw.com/welcome, which will tell you a little bit more about what I'm doing and the projects I'm working on other than this podcast. And then you can sign up for it. You'll get a free ebook. The ebook we mentioned earlier, How to Be a Successful Artist, if you're an artist. So yeah, that's where I share a lot of the stuff. Or follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Kevin_Chung, where I share a lot of stuff too.
Perfect. All right, down to a few more questions. Off the top of your head, who would you say is the most creative person you personally know?
I thought about this for a second, but I want to go back to the very first person I interviewed. He is Josh Carrasco, a.k.a. Matt Ills. He is a battle rapper.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really, really interesting interview, first one I ever did. And he made it really easy to talk to him and begin my journey as a podcaster. Battle rapping, if you don't know what that is, it's people are trying to rap about the other person, like trying to talk about their faults or whatever. It's like dissing the other person.
Yeah.
It's making fun of the other people. And that just takes so much skill and creative thinking and quick thinking and improvisational skills and all these things combined. And you have to do it in the blink of an eye or else you're going to lose. I don't believe he battle raps anymore, but he also does freestyle rapping. And if you listen to the episode and you hear him explain like the splinter in a building in downtown Orlando, it's really interesting to see how he combines different ideas to come up with lines or how different things are taking a journey. It's really cool.
Yeah, actually that specific moment about the splinter in a windowsill, I think it was, That was the deepest point for me, and I remember my reaction from when I first listened to that episode, because if I remember correctly, I believe the concept that he presented was zoom in, it was like zero in on something small and minuscule, and then blow it up and make a big deal out of it. And so maybe another manner of speaking, it's kind of like make it into an Ant-Man experience. Hmm. But finding that amount of detail in something that's seemingly minuscule, I really like the walkthrough, the mindset that he had.
Yeah, and another person before we move on to the next question, which I already know you will ask. Carl Rosa, who is a man who does trips to Japan. He also has a sushi club in Houston, and he is working with a bunch of different companies now to show them how to take trips to Japan. And he started off as a real estate agent or person executive. He had never eaten sushi in his life before Hurricane Katrina came. He was living in New Orleans. He moved to Houston. And the very first time that he tried sushi, he hated it. And which is really interesting, knowing the outcome of his journey. But he talks about how, oh, this can't be what people are talking about. There has to be something different. So he started a sushi club so he can explore those ideas. And through that, he was able to get enough interest to take people on a trip to Japan. And that episode is a really interesting story of how he was able to take this idea and run with it. And I actually took one of those trips, and it was really awesome.
You went to Japan?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
On one of his trips.
Huh. Well, I got something else that I can ask you about offline. But yeah, I agree. That one's great. I think the thing I liked about that interview the most was that his entire experience was driven by his curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just his desire to go explore and discover. You know, he didn't come preloaded with any kind of expertise or knowledge or anything like that, but he built this club, which is now, I don't know if I want to overblow it and call it an empire, but he's going several times a year, and that was just because he was deeply curious about something.
Mm-hmm.
Way inspiring. Okay, so shifting the question, who would you say is the most creative person who you'd like to meet?
Who I'd like to meet? Mm-hmm. Interesting. That changes the answer a little bit. I like it. I'm going to say Jason Silva. And I don't know how many people know of Jason Silva, but he is the host of Brain Games, where he explores different ideas and the way our brains work.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the interesting thing that he does. The interesting thing that he does is called Shots of Awe.
Yeah.
And Shots of Awe are these free flow improvised videos where he combines his own thoughts and ideas with music and video into these wonderful explorations of so many different ideas like love and philosophy and art and just so many different things that hearing them, you can tell that he's in a state of flow when he does them because they just come out as so poetic. And just picking his brain after hearing so many different people interview him, it would be really cool, I think.
And Shots of Awe can be found on YouTube, correct?
Correct. Just YouTube.com and then search for Shots of Awe or just type in Shots of Awe into Google. I'm assuming you can find it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great stuff. I also highly recommend. Okay, so we're down to the cornerstone of cracking creativity. This two-part question. What is your definition of creativity, Kevin Chung? And what can people do to be more creative?
Oh, man. This could probably be its own podcast episode. There are a couple of different ideas. I don't know if I want to give it a strict definition like I've been asking people to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the first is, it's just a combination of ideas. So everything that has ever been creative is just combine one idea with another. So if you have the idea of an iPhone, that thing existed in two separate ideas. One was a cell phone, one was a computer. You just combine those two and you have an iPhone. It was an extremely creative idea at the time. And now that we have lived with smartphones for so long, it's like, okay, whatever. But, you know, the idea of combining those two things together took such creative thought and idea, like creativity. Another thing that I think creativity is listening to your own inner thoughts,
mm-hmm.
and taking your life experiences and using them and combining them into something that never existed before, because you are the only person that will ever live your life, ever. So your ideas and the things that you went through can impact what you think and how you combine those ideas into something interesting.
Wonderful.
And one of the other things is the idea of play. So when you're trying to be creative, the idea is not to ridicule or think badly of the idea before it can grow or, you know, mature. So if you look at a child play, you'll see that they have no worries about whether their idea is stupid or something. If you watch them play their own game, they'll invent the rules. One really cool thing that came up recently was this game called The Floor is Lava.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to that childhood idea of, oh, I can't touch the floor. It's on fire.
Yeah.
You know, kids will think of all kinds of crazy ideas if you let them. And at a certain point, we lose all of that. And we think that we can't be creative anymore. But anyone can be creative if you just allow yourself to be. And one of the good ways to do is that 10 ideas a day.
Wonderful. So last but not least, what sort of a challenge, either large or small, would you like to present to the audience?
Think of a project that you want to do and figure out what the very first step in achieving that project is. So if there's a painting idea that you have that you haven't started on, something that's been tucked away in the closet for a very long time and you thought you couldn't do it, figure out what the very first step is to that and do that thing first. Don't worry about anything else on that list, like how else to do anything else. Figure out what that first step is, do that first step, and then think about the very next step. So the idea is to not worry about this humongous goal. So you have that project where you're trying to create this memoir of the salsa dancing place. So if you hadn't started that before, the very first thing you would do is, who is the first person I can interview? And then you would go there. Ask that person if they want to be interviewed. If they say yes, you do that interview.
So in terms of a first step, are we talking Goliath-sized step or a David-sized step?
We are talking the David step, the very, very, very smallest thing. So even take your example again. What is a question that I can ask this person? That's even less of a – or find out who that person is. Find out who that person is. That's it. You've done your very first step.
There you go.
And then the next step is, what is the next step in the process? So what is the question that I can ask him or her? And then you have the second step of this humongous project that you want to complete. But the idea is just to get started on doing that thing that will get you on your way to the goal that you want to achieve.
Yeah, it certainly seems easier to walk a mile when you realize that you don't have to walk a mile with one step or two steps. You can actually take 1,000 steps, which you will likely require. But
1,000 tiny steps.
1,000 tiny steps.
Yeah, and the idea is to, you're not running a sprint, you're completing a marathon. So take the first step. And it's a long process, but if you continue to do the small steps, you will eventually achieve what you want to achieve.
So Kevin, how can people reach out to you to find out more about what you're working on?
If you want to learn more about the thing other than cracking creativity, you can go to my website, marketingtrw.com, and the show notes will also have the creative group that I am working on with Mike and Kent, and there will probably also be a link to Journey to Creative Freedom there that you can check out.
All right. Well, Kevin, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for letting me be a part of your 50th episode of Cracking Creativity. I hope you're around for another 50, and have a great day.
Thank you. And that's it for the 50th episode of Cracking Creativity. For show notes, go to crackingcreativity.org/50. If you like this episode, subscribe to the show on iTunes at crackingcreativity.org/subscribe. Also, feel free to write a review or leave me a comment about the show. Hope this stoked your creative fires, and I'll see you next time on Cracking Creativity.